Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a loaded Friday, live in Los Angeles, it's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. Very good mood today. I've really got my facial hair figured out. Took me a while to get that mustache off my face. I've really got things going on. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. It's Friday. Looking forward to the weekends. Been an incredible week of stories. Next week, it's like full-on draft mode for the next 2 weeks.
I know. So we have an epidemic in America. People see what they want to see. There's this green fuzzy thing over a ship in San Diego. UFO. No, it's not. It's been debunked already. No, it's not. It's a plane through a fuzzy lens. Looks like a pyramid. It's not. Planes have lights on the nose, the wings. It's a plane moving at plane speed. People see what they want to see. UFO people see what they want to see. We all see what we want to see. People want to see Mac Jones as Tom Brady. Tom Brady's got one of the best cold weather arms in the history of the league. He's one of the most accurate throwers. He was drafted by a Major League Baseball team. He's a much better athlete. And Mac Jones is not even the same galaxy as Tom Brady. Tom's bigger with a better arm. So finally, San Francisco's coming to their senses. The 49ers are coming to their senses. Albert Breer, who I trust. Benjamin Albright today comes out. San Francisco, lot of buzz. Niners, Justin Fields. Mike Silver, a guy I trust. 49ers, Justin Fields. People see what they want to see. There's been already a Justin Fields myth debunked this week. That he always throws to the first read. That he's not somehow capable, smart enough, cognitively can't go to a second read. Been totally debunked. Because blogs don't check on anything. Nobody checks on anything. It's a post-truth society. Just throw crap out there, it sticks. Mac Jones, we've suddenly elevated him to, oh, he is so cagey. I hear this a lot. He is so smart. His judgment is unprecedented. Really, there's five quarterback prospects in the first round. He's the only one with a DUI. And he's a smart one. First year away from his parents. All five of these quarterbacks left their parents. Only one got a DUI. Mac Jones. Doesn't mean he's a horrible human. We all make mistakes. And Josh Allen had Josh Allen at Buffalo had a really bad tweet. He was like 15. Goofy kid. Kids make mistakes. But you can't keep selling me on how great Mac Jones's judgment is. And he's the one with a DUI. And you can't keep selling me on Justin Fields. Oh, yeah, cognitively, totally debunked. You know, it's people see what they want to see. You can have the same story. A conservative sees it one way, a liberal sees it the other. It's the same story. I mean, Johnny Manziel came out. Cleveland Browns had lousy people in their front office, low self-esteem sports franchise, and they fell for Johnny Manziel's cockiness. They saw confidence. It's what they wanted to see. They wanted to see confidence. Bill Belichick took Johnny Manziel off his draft board. Andy Reid, off our draft board. The good coach, Sean Payton, off draft board. You know, the good coaches saw cocky and immature. The Browns, who have low self-esteem and had a bunch of knuckleheads in the front office, saw confident. I said on the air, you can't draft Johnny Manziel. He's going to be a massive bust. People see. Say it out loud with Mac Jones. I got nothing against the kid. Say it out loud. He's the least athletic first-round quarterback. That's not arguable. With the lowest ceiling, and he's got a DUI in college. And that's number three pick in the draft. Folks, those are three red flags. Not athletic, low ceiling, DUI. I'm not saying the kid can't succeed in the NFL. But give me a break. Everybody sees what they want to see with these guys. We're making crap up with Justin Fields. The other thing is, we have to acknowledge that Alabama players often don't perform at the NFL level. Why? And they used to say this about Tom Osborne, the legendary coach at Nebraska, that Osborne and Nick Saban are such good coaches at the college level that the kids they have peak in college. They don't have another gear. Now, Julio Jones was great in college, great in the NFL. I'm not saying they don't have, I mean, good God, they got so many players drafted, some hit. But a lot of Bama guys are busts, semi-busts, or just really average. Because Nick Saban is so great, he squeezes everything out of them. This is what they said with Tom Osborne. Nebraska dominated college football. None of their guys were good pros. Because Osborne, he squeezed everything out. And I could name five coaches in college who can recruit and can't coach. And it's just the opposite. There's a lot of guys that come college to pro, they're better pros. I can name the coaches that NFL GMs tell me they can recruit, they can't coach. Saban recruits and coaches and squeezes everything out of them. So, I mean, Henry Ruggs, wide receiver Alabama last year. Dude can't run a route, just fast. You know, D. Milner couldn't play. Nothing against the guy, couldn't play. Nick hit him. But thanks to good reporting, we're seeing some of this nonsense go away. Justin Fields, I believe, should be the second quarterback taken. It looks like now San Francisco third. But this narrative that was out there that, you know, cognitively, I'm a little concerned he doesn't throw to anybody other than the primary, basically saying that's the simplest read. You come out of the huddle, you know where you're throwing, you roll right, you throw it, boom. Oh, wait, PFF graded throws past the first read last 2 years of college football. Justin Fields is number one. Mac Jones is last of all the first-round quarterbacks. People see what they want to see. Politically, sports, UFOs, you see what you want to see. Say it out loud. Lowest graded quarterback on throws outside of the first read. Max last. Athletic last. DUI. He's got it. I root for all these guys. But some of this stuff is nonsense. Now, I don't want to be complainer guy. So I want to find a solution to this Aaron Rodgers Packers thing because I'm tired of talking about it. I'm honestly over it. Like, it's off season. So Jordy Nelson, great receiver, played with him, then I think Raiders later, was on the Pat McAfee show, and he said, I just don't get this not pay Aaron Rodgers, don't take care of Aaron Rodgers, don't make him happy. Here's Jordy Nelson.
I don't know what they're doing. I can't answer any of those questions. It's mind-blowing sometimes, especially, I mean, when he comes out and has an MVP year, and if they don't want to commit or do whatever they want to do to, I mean, I don't know, show appreciation or whatever it is for him the next 2 years. Seems like it'd be a pretty easy and simple move that I would say 100%, if not 99.9% of people would agree with.
Okay, so I don't want to complain about this. Aaron is highly compensated. He's the number one cap hit in the NFL. It is Russell Wilson's like up there, number two, three. It is harder to win championships. You can win games because Russell and Aaron are so athletic, so great. You're going to win a bunch of games with them, but it's hard to win a championship when you watch Mahomes and Brady have all-star teams because Mahomes just restructured his deal and Brady restructures his deal. But all this is solvable. Here's a solution. Aaron gets the Jeopardy job, and I'm dead serious. Gives him $15 million a year. You can go to Green Bay. It's like a shoe deal. Hey, I'll take a little cut. I think Aaron would probably be willing to do that. First of all, Jeopardy should hire Aaron Rodgers. He's good at it, and he's a celebrity. Nothing against Ken Jennings and all these other Jeopardy heads, but those guys, they're not going to add any audience to Jeopardy. The people who watch it will watch it with Ken Jennings. And you can pay Ken Jennings $7 million a year. Aaron's going to bring in a guy like me who occasionally watches Jeopardy. I'd watch it more with Aaron Rodgers. There's no question. I would stop the TV. You know, we all fish around on the TV. I'd watch Aaron Rodgers. He would get you casual eyeballs. And Aaron's got leverage because he's got this other job he's good at called Packer quarterback. So Aaron will make about $12 to $15 million a year. I talked to an agent last night. That's what he would make. Ken Jennings makes $7-$8 million. Aaron would make double that because he's going to give your audience a little boost. And he's a celebrity. It's almost like, you know, The Rock. Why is Rock the highest paid actor? It's not just because he's a great thespian. He's got his own audience from wrestling. He brings people in. And Jeopardy for Aaron Rodgers would be a little like Giselle for Tom or a shoe deal for an NBA player. It's ancillary income. If Aaron's making 15 large in the summer in 43 days of work, Aaron may be like, okay, I'll restructure my deal. Aaron doesn't have any kids. Aaron's got nothing but time. He's got a girlfriend or a fiance now, but Aaron's got a lot of time compared to Tom Brady, compared to, you know, once you get married, once you have kids, there's a lot of stuff to do. Aaron is single. He's a private jetter. He is engaged, but there's a difference between engaged and five kids. Aaron's got time. It's 43 days. He can make $15 million. There's your solution. So the reality with this is you can fight. You see this all the time, where Fox has done this historically. Michael Strahan works for this network, and he works for that network. Why? Because you can't get Michael Strahan if you limit his options. Michael Strahan's going to do other stuff. The talented people in this business have second, third, and fourth jobs. Sometimes other networks. Why? They leave. There's too many Hulus and too many Netflix and too many iHearts and too many Fox and too many WWEs, and you want to keep your best people? You better not be rigid, because they'll just move on. Now you can have your own network here and your own network there. And I read a story this morning. Some guy's making $400,000 a year on Cameo. I mean, so the bottom line is, you want to make Aaron happy? Give him the Jeopardy job. Make 15 large. And I think Aaron would probably go, all right, let's sit down. We can restructure a little bit. Give me a little signing bonus. Aaron's a smart guy. He wants J.J. Watt. He wants to keep his center. He wants to keep those Aaron Joneses. So there's a solution to this whole thing. It really is, and I don't think it's crazy. I think the world we live in now, Michael Strahan can do Good Morning America and Sunday. It's called private jets. You can do it. You can figure it out. There's people all over the country working second and third jobs. I said, well, I'm off at noon. I don't go to bed till 10. I may just go and, I'd be just do a second show. I mean, just go do Jeopardy. Go make $15 million. Solve it. It's your Giselle. It's your shoe deal for Nike in a weird sort of way. All right. I'm not trying to reduce Giselle Bundchen into a question about Russian literature by any stretch. But I'm just saying is when you get that $15 million large somewhere else, all right, you go to your primary employer and say, oh.
Giselle's like $300 million large. But yeah.
It's the world's greatest shoe deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's just the way the world works. Okay, so interesting question today. Trevor Lawrence, the number one pick in the draft, everybody said he's very chill. His dad says he's not defined by football. He could give it up and be a happy kid. People freaked out. Urban Meyer is obsessive. Can they work together? My thoughts on that coming up next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Long story, I'll make it short as possible. I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, and my best friend in college was a guy named Dean Braun. He eventually transferred from the school we were at to the University of Washington. Dean has done very, very well for himself. He has been my broker for 30 years. I trust him implicitly. We talk often, and he has worked his tail off and done very well for himself, because in the Pacific Northwest for 30 years, he's done very well with the Microsoft employees. And if you want financial questions, he's terrific. He told me a story years ago about these Microsoft guys were geniuses. Like they were leaving Harvard to go make millions. Bill Gates, Paul Allen, Steve Ballmer. These were geniuses, smartest guys in the country, top half of half of half of half of 1%. And they'd all made their money 70s, 80s, early 90s. And there was this kid named Jeff Bezos, who runs Amazon. And he was starting a little company called Amazon. And the Microsoft guys had so much excess money, they were investing in a lot of these companies. And the Microsoft guys, geniuses in America. Microsoft was really at the forefront of all this stuff with Apple. And they met with Bezos. And Dean told me the story. The Microsoft guys, the guys were worth $150 million at 33 years old, all came back and said, we can't keep up with Bezos. That's the smartest person we've ever met. That's why Jeff Bezos is the richest guy in the country. It's not that he came up with a good idea. He's literally brilliant. Reed Hastings at Netflix has crushed traditional television. He's brilliant. Masters at Stanford. Theo Epstein doesn't know more baseball. He went to Yale and he broke both the Cubs and the Red Sox curse. I've met a lot of baseball guys. Nobody's as smart as Theo Epstein. Raw intelligence almost always wins. It can be quirky. It can be condescending. It can be haughty. It can be above you, but it wins. The two smartest college football coaches, and I've met most of them I've ever met, it is no coincidence. It's Nick Saban and Urban Meyer. And I've talked to both. I've talked to Urban a lot. Folks, both of those guys have gone on TV and done analyst work without really any practice and have been brilliant day one. They're really smart. There's a story today that Trevor Lawrence and Urban Meyer by Dan Wetzel may not work. Trevor Lawrence is chill, not defined by football, and Urban Meyer is a maniac. And he is, by the way. Urban Meyer would lose 20 pounds coaching at Florida, working himself to death. He used to have to write notes saying, eat three meals a day. He would text recruits during church. He admits it. He once scheduled post-game victory dinners, and he would often miss them. He's a maniac, but he's also brilliant, and he succeeds at everything he touches, and so is Nick Saban. The smartest basketball guy I've ever met, Steve Kerr. I covered him in Portland. He was brilliant as a player and as a broadcaster and as a coach. Jeff Bezos, Reed Hastings, Theo Epstein. Urban's going to succeed because he's smart. That's why he's going to succeed. Now, I'm not saying he's Belichick. I'm not saying he's Andy Reid. He was never a fan of NFL football. He told me. He goes, I don't even watch football. But he's a quick learner, and he'll figure it out. And he'll get worked his first year or two. He'll get worked by some NFL guys. But I always have a rule when I hire people in radio or TV. I just hire smart. I'll teach you the rest of it. You can have 30 years in radio. If you're a mouth breather, I can't do anything with you. There's nothing I can do with you. Bill Belichick, mother spoke seven languages, and his dad wrote the book on scouting. Bill's not perfect. He's just smarter than everybody else. I'm sorry. Football coaches come in two shapes and sizes. Smart guy, tough guy. Sean McVay's really smart. Dan Campbell's really tough. You're going to break your kneecaps. Take the smart guy. I don't know if Urban Meyer will be a home run, but if Trevor Lawrence is healthy, no college coach that I can think of has a greater chance to succeed because he just figures stuff out quite fast. I've seen a million college football coaches and players do college football games. Nobody figured it out faster than Saban and Urban Meyer, the two best college coaches I've ever seen. And by the way, I don't think you have to have perfect personality matches. Michael Jordan punched a teammate. He was coached by the Zen master. Okay, Tony Dungy, Peyton Manning, Bruce Arians, cocktails at five, Tom Brady. Ideally, you'd like to have kind of a Breeze, Sean Payton relentlessness. But the bottom line is Doug Collins was relentless, and so was Michael, and they didn't get along. It didn't work. Not that they didn't get along. They actually did get along, but it just didn't work as well as Phil Jackson, the Zen master. So my take on this whole thing with Urban Meyer and Nick Saban, when in doubt, Dan Wetzel has a very interesting column. You should read it. It's excellent. When in doubt, I just go, how smart are they? And if the answer is really, I'm going to check the box of I think it mostly works. Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line.
By the way, Meryl Streep, in my opinion, is the best actor in America for 30 years. Masters at Yale.
I always say I'll take competent over nice any day
and
when
smart.
It comes to work.
Yeah.
Not in a personal life, but in work, yes. It's easier to work with smart people.
Yes.
It is. So Anthony Davis is returning, and it's getting closer and closer. Frank Vogel announced yesterday that AD has been cleared for full contact practice. He also added that he will be eased back into his workload, and he'll have restricted minutes at first to help him get back into shape. Team did not give any update on when LeBron is expected back, but Anthony Davis could be back this weekend,
okay,
but they're going to keep him limited.
I have a question. So when did Anthony get hurt? Like February, right?
Yes. Yeah.
It was going to be 4 to 6 weeks, and now it's April, mid-April. We all know this is a game, right?
Well, Yes, but within, I would say with Anthony Davis,
be cautious.
You have to be extra cautious.
But it does feel like a little like last year in the bubble. They're getting a very convenient
they have the convenience of giving him as much time as he needs.
And the Lakers are more than competent with him gone. Lost last night, but they're a competent team.
They're
that can
13-15 since he went out.
They're just, so it's like, what's the point? It's like James Harden. There's no reason to play James Harden. Brooklyn can win 4 to 5 games without him. Just get him for their playoffs.
They slid from, the Lakers slid from 2 to 5 in the Western Conference standings.
This team can win on the road.
They lost 121-113 last night, which is not really a reflection of how much of a blowout that game was.
Yeah, but Jaylen Brown, I watched for 45 minutes. Jaylen Brown did not miss a shot.
He had 40 points.
I don't know what his shooting percentage was. He did not miss a shot in the 40. He shot 7 shots when I watched. I don't think he missed one.
He had 40, and all 5 starters had double-digit points. Yeah. So there's not a whole lot of defense from the Lakers.
Lakers mailed it in.
Albeit normally a very good defensive team. But, you got to take your time with Anthony Davis. But I do think it's important that they are focusing on easing him back in. He's not going to be getting his full minutes that he usually has. And the focus is getting him back into game shape as they're heading into the playoffs, which is what we expected. So, inexplicably, Mac Jones has been getting compared to Tom Brady leading up to the draft, which I made the decree yesterday. So anyone in the media that is listening, do not do Tom Brady comparisons to anyone in the draft, please.
From
this point forward, it's just not, let's just take that off the table, please. Yeah. But he does think he has some similarities to Brady. He doesn't want to be mentioned with the GOAT just yet. He said, I don't like comparing myself to him. I've got a long way to go. But coming out of college, doesn't have arm strength, can't throw a spiral, can't move. I can do that stuff, but it's more like the intangible stuff. He's got the fire still, and that's why he's so good.
Well, he's also got drafted by a baseball team. He's 6'5". He's got a great arm. Let's stop with the Tom's intangibles are great. Tom's tangibles are great.
Yeah.
Tom was drafted by a Major League Baseball team. Peyton Manning wasn't. You know, so we always hear about Tom's intangibles. You're not the GOAT on intangibles.
No.
You're the GOAT on tangibles.
The Tom Brady not being athletic thing gets really blown out of proportion.
You know what it is, Joy? It's that picture when he was in the combine.
But yeah, one bad picture can really define you.
But 20 years ago was different. I'll give you an example, and I've said this. I remember as a kid, I think it's in the 80s. So Fred Lynn from Southern California and Jim Rice were great baseball players. And I can remember reading the story, and I think it was in the Sporting News. It may have been in the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Red Sox are now lifting weights during the season. Revolutionary. That was the story. And Fred Lynn was this sort of wispy, great glove. He was kind of a slender, left-handed, fantastic center fielder. But he didn't look real. And they were like talking about Jim Rice and Fred Lynn are lifting weights. That was in the 80s. That wasn't in the 50s.
Right.
So athletes, if you go back to when Tom Brady came into the league, a lot of guys weren't yoked up. I remember Vernon Davis was the first guy I ever watched the draft. Or the combine. And took his shirt off. It was the first time I ever even thought, holy hell. There were a lot of guys that weren't ripped.
Well, we had Mark Schlereth on the other day. And we were talking about someone coming in the locker room, and he mentioned that a guy came into the locker room and he was like muscles from his earlobes to his toes, and he couldn't play. So like it doesn't really actually matter. But we get a little disrespectful with how athletic Tom Brady is. Like, yeah, I don't know, he's only been playing 20 years. He just won a Super Bowl.
By the way,
he's kind of athletic.
Been hurt once, telling you his body is a professional athlete body. He doesn't get hurt.
Yes, we know that a big part of why he is so successful is because of his brain. But the brain is housed in Tom Brady's body, which he then has to use that body to do what the brain is telling him to do. He is athletic, and that's it. Like, maybe he's not as athletic as Lamar Jackson or Patrick Mahomes, but he's still athletic.
I was at a speaking engagement in New York with Eli Manning and stood next to him. Eli's way bigger in person than he is on television. Eli Manning is a big kid. Up close.
Yeah, let's just stop with Tom Brady comparisons. So the NFC West is one of the strongest divisions in the NFL. All 4 teams have made moves this offseason to try and get better in 2021. And it's going to be some tough competition in that division next year. But Rams coach Sean McVay said on the Rich Eisen show that he doesn't feel the same way.
No, it's not fun. Pool. It's really not a fun pool. It's a pool that I wouldn't mind, not being in, to be honest with you. But Hey, it like sure it. Makes it fun for you to say, hey, how is it fun swimming in the deep end six times a year, Sean?
So he doesn't enjoy it as much as the fans do, the tough competition.
Not only that, but the quarterbacks are great. It's not just the coaches.
Well, he's 16-8 in the NFC West in the four seasons.
Shanahan
he's been there.
Has been his bugaboo a little bit. That's the guy he struggles with.
He's 17-8, including the playoffs, and the Rams have won the NFC West twice under McVay in his first two seasons, 2017 and 2018. This is, I think everyone thinks this is the most competitive division.
Well, and I also think it's the best coach division. Second is the Belichick, Brian Flores, Sean McDermott division, so we don't know if Kingsbury or Robert Saleh are good, but when you have three.
I don't know. I think the AFC North, you got to talk about the AFC North too.
Tomlin, Stefanski, that's good too. You're right. That's great too.
The Bengals we're not sure on yet.
But it doesn't.
But I don't know that we're sure about the Cardinals yet either. Like
Zach
I would
Taylor,
say, I would put the Cardinals and the Bengals sort of. Obviously, the Cardinals are more talented and further along.
Young coach, we don't know yet.
Young coach, young quarterback that we think has potential to be great.
Yeah.
So there's just some tough divisions in the NFL right now.
Good stuff. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Back out with Peyton Manning and the Colts. 6 years in the NFL and a guy I love listening to. Knows college, knows pro. We hired him just a while back, a couple years ago. It's been a great hire for us. Brock Huard, Fox Sports NFL analyst, is joining us live. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz. Best or nothing. So, listen, I'm on the Justin Fields thing. I think we're kind of making up stuff about him that's just not true. And I've said this before, people see what they want to see. That's what they want to see. And also, stories sell. And, you know, Justin Fields, Ohio State, nitpick. I think we share an opinion on Justin Fields. I think we both think he's good. Well, where do you have him?
Yeah, he's my second in this class, Colin. And I don't know how many other quarterbacks, former quarterbacks you talk to, but most of the guys that I have chatted with on radio shows and otherwise that used to play the position, it's Trevor 1, it's Justin Fields 2. And I love coming into the show listening to all that body talk. You're right up my alley. You enjoy it. Because that's the first thing that I do, man. When I meet these guys, like you, Colin, you talked about meeting Eli. And when I saw Trevor Lawrence as a true freshman, early enrollee, I did a spring game. I think I've told you this story a ton. It's like, sheesh. I mean, I don't look up at many guys, but he's one I looked up to. Saw Justin Fields a couple times in college in person, and he is just built.
Yeah.
And I know he's now on a vegan diet. He's cut some weight. He feels a little bit better, but he's just a phenomenal athlete. I love the body. I love the body of work. I love 20-2 in college, and the only losses are, you know, in a semifinal and in a championship game, Clemson and Bama in respective years. And if I'm John Lynch and I'm Kyle Shanahan and I'm sitting in there and you all just got done talking about the NFC West, you know, and I've got to face Aaron Donald and Leonard Floyd, and I got to face J.J. Watt and Chandler Jones, and I got to face Carlos Dunlap and all the moves that Pete and John have made, I got to have somebody that can create a little bit. And Justin does a little bit more than just a little bit in the creative mode.
You know, it's interesting. There's a story by Dan Wetzel today saying, you know, Trevor Lawrence is just chill. And Urban is a maniac, and Urban would kind of laugh and tell you he is. And now, again, you played with Peyton Manning, who is super intense. In fact, Bill Polian loves him and called him a teeth clencher. I mean, Peyton is just, I mean, he is rough on people. Jeff Saturday would tell you, I love him, but he is rough. And Tony Dungy's more mentor. More, you know, he's quieter. Your thought on, though, the relationship between chill quarterback and intense coach?
Yeah, intense and demanding. I think that's the word that I would use with Peyton. He was so demanding of everyone, the film guy, the backup quarterback, the receiver, the running back coach. He was just demanding because he was that way on himself. And I think that's the important part here. Are you chill in personality? Are you a West Coast kid? Are you a Southern, you know, Georgia kid that's just easygoing and a little bit laid back personality? That's fine. But when it comes to competing, when it comes to doing what you love to do, how demanding are you in every last little detail? And I think there's a lot of guys, Colin, in the league today, even young players that have to learn that. That's what Tom's brain does. That's what Drew Brees' brain does. It just demands constantly to be excellent. And, geez, I mean, the resume is 90-6. Kid has played 96 games of high school and college football, Colin. 96. And he's 90-6 in those games. And you talk to anybody around that program, day one when he set foot at Clemson, he demanded excellence of himself, everybody around him. And you don't become a champion, you don't become a winner unless you got that demanding, competitive nature on the inside.
It is interesting. His dad, though, said this week, Brock, his dad said, listen, he's not defined by football. He could give it up at some point. He'd be fine with it. He's a happy kid. Reminds me a little of Andrew Luck. I mean, what do you make? Because I think Joy and I both, when we first read it, our first thing was, oh, no. But, you know, I said yesterday, Michael Jordan was so intense, he wore himself out twice and quit. What do you make of that? Doesn't have a chip on his shoulder and kind of football's part of my life, doesn't define it. Does it worry you at all?
When you're the one-on-ones, Colin, you know what you can be? Transparent.
Yeah.
Because every other agent has told every other kid, hey, when you talk to these teams, what, Colin? Oh, football is the most important thing in my life. I love football more than anything. Marvin Demoff told me that 25 years ago or whatever it was. Hey, listen, when you go to the combine, you sit in these interviews, you got to all tell them, man, football is the only thing. And I eat, breathe, and sleep, and I just love it. It's versed by every one of these employees that want to be drafted by their employer. But when you're one-on-ones, when you're gifted in every way, when you check every box as Trevor does, when you have the body of work, when you got a unique and incredible athleticism and size and strength and all of it, guess what you can be? Yeah, I mean, I love football and I want to win in the worst way, but it doesn't define me. And I think to have kind of some of the stones to actually be honest and not just say what you want, you know, what you think the employer wants you to say, I think it's a little bit refreshing, to be honest.
I want to ask you, you've seen a lot of Carolina last few years, NFL analyst for us at Fox, Sam Darnold. I was saying this to somebody the other day. Joe Brady, his coordinator, is 31 and is already up for head coaching jobs. His biggest concern to Carolina is my coordinator is probably going to be gone in 2 years. But how do you think it works? You know their personnel. You know Darnold. You covered him in the Pac-12. He can be a little reckless. What do you make of him to Carolina?
I mean, that's the single biggest thing, Colin, is I would have probably taken Sam Darnold number one in that class, to be honest with you. I thought of him that much. I know you thought highly of him, too. But reckless is being nice. He's been horrendous taking care of the football with the Jets. They're building an excellent defense. I like the fit. If you and I would have chatted the day before that trade went down, and we would have put all the teams together that said, okay, where can Sam end up? Where's a really good fit? Maybe just in culture, maybe out of the limelight just a little bit. Young, aspiring coaches as a head coach, as a coordinator that are innovative, that are building a defense around him, you know, that takes some of the burden off of him. Oh, by the way, one of the best running backs in the league, so you can play action and move. I mean, Colin, Carolina would have been in our top three.
Yeah.
I think it really would have been as we walk through those different teams. So it is a new lease on life. He's got to take care of the football. He's got to walk that line and understand how precious it is. Not too different, to be honest with you, than when I went to Indianapolis and Tony Dungy was the new coach for Peyton Manning. And I know that was the demand that he had. If we're going to win a world championship, Peyton, put up all these numbers, do all these stats, but we've got to take care of the football. And look at Peyton's turnover numbers once Tony came to town.
Yep.
They plummeted. More wins. Obviously, a Super Bowl and a couple trips for Peyton and two in two different cities. I'm not putting those expectations on Sam, but I fully believe this will re-energize his career.
Yeah, I talked to Jason Garrett, former Cowboy coach, about a month ago. And we talked off the air. We were just talking on the phone. And he said, I had to have a sit down with Daniel Jones. And he said, listen, you're just not going to keep this job. You got to start. And by the way, next four games, he had like one turnover. So like to your point, that's been Pete Carroll's knock on Russell Wilson. I can take the running around. I can't take the picks. Brock Huard, great job. 6 years in the league, buddy. We'll talk soon. Thank you so much.
Love it, Colin. You got it, buddy. See ya.
By the way, interesting. So NFL.com, Greg Rosenthal, they ranked, based on draft performance, the best GMs in the NFL and the worst. Interesting. Interesting. Who is worst? That's coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, So do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good things come to those who wait at Jersey Mike's. They also come to those who don't. Cut to the chase by Jersey Mike's. Be a sub above. Download the app. Order ahead. Skip the line. Jersey Mike's subs. So as you know, I bring general managers of NFL teams on the show a lot. A lot of my sources are general managers, scouting directors, blah, blah, blah. Is I've always said if I didn't do this for a living, joy is my witness, I would want to be a general manager in the NFL. I love the draft. I like building stuff. I like the architecture of it. Of course, I wouldn't succeed. Like a GM probably wouldn't succeed as a talk show host. I probably picked the right career, but I love it. Everybody's got a second job they would do. You know, some people want to be, actors or they want to be screenwriters. I picked the right job, but this would be my second job. And so I'm fascinated by it. I ask a lot of questions. I love talking to general managers, and they make fun of me because they think I'm obsessed by it. Every time I do a mock draft, they all are like, just stay to a sports host. You're not going to be a general manager. You're crazy. But the point being is I love it. So I talk about a lot of guys. Mickey Loomis of the Saints, I think, is unbelievable. Brandon Bean of Buffalo, Chris Ballard. These are the guys I talk about over and over and over. Well, NFL.com studied all their picks last decade, and they have their top five. So their top five are the guys we love, which is Chris Ballard's number one, Kevin Colbert, Steelers, Jason Light of the Bucks, Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, Buffalo, and Mickey Loomis. These are the guys I constantly bring up. I just think some guys are just great at this draft thing, and they are great. Then let's go to the bottom of it. John Gruden is, of the ones rated, was right near the bottom. Ryan Pace, who I've been critical of, Howie Roseman, Dave Gettleman, the guys I've been critical of. But John Gruden's interesting. So the problem for John Gruden is he made two huge trades early. Amari Cooper, he got a bunch of first-round picks, and Khalil Mack got a bunch of first-round picks. He inherited those players, and we went, whoa! He didn't hit on all those picks. In fact, he hit on one. So he gets all those picks for Amari Cooper and Khalil Mack. Five, four are meh. One's a bust, maybe two, and one, Josh Jacobs, running back, has been great. Three of those five picks have been complete head-scratchers. Henry Ruggs, I didn't like him, didn't get it. He's fast, nothing else. And John Gruden can be an eight-year-old at a toy store. The faster, the flashier it is, mommy, I want that. You ever seen those made-for-television products? The ShamWow, the OxyClean, the knife that cuts through a coin, the Snuggie? I mean, nobody has ever had a blanket and thought, you know what this thing is missing? Arms. You've never in your life taken the change out of your pocket and thought, I'd love to cut it in half. But Gruden is one of those guys that feels like, to me, he sits at home and would order that stuff. He falls in love with stuff. You cannot fall in love with college players. You have to fall in like with them. That's why John Gruden is a very, very emotional guy. That's what makes him great. That's why we love John. He emotes. He's great. He's funny. That's why he's a great television personality and why I think he's a really good coach. He can't do personnel. You got to get him out of personnel. It's not what he does. He loved Johnny Manziel. Of course he did. Because Johnny Manziel was different and flashy and talkative and cocky. It's right up John's alley. And of course he loved Henry Ruggs because he's a burner. He's a track guy. He runs 100 miles an hour. And so when you start looking at these guys, this is why most coaches, including Belichick, should stay away from personnel. When I talk to Chris Ballard, when I talk to Tom Telesco, when I talk to these guys, and a couple others that would remain anonymous, Brett Veach, Kansas City. These guys are just like being a chef. You're just looking for fresh produce. They don't get emotional about it. Chris Ballard talks me off the ledge. It's just like they're accountants. They're like, this is what he does well. This is what he doesn't do well. I like this. I never hear love. I hear like. I never hear love. Oh, I love this guy. They like him, but they know they're human and they're 22 years old and they can get hurt. Gruden falls in love with everything. And so you start looking at the goods and the bads. And, it is interesting because what they do is they give you the best pick the guy's ever made and the worst pick. And even the best guys have whiffed. But it is funny But this is inexact science. So Jason Light of the Buccaneers, he drafted a guy I loved out of college. Because I'm a recruiting dork. He took Vernon Hargraves, the third, a corner from Florida. He was the best corner in high school. He was the best corner in college. I loved him. It didn't work. So it's an inexact science. Some guys don't love the game. They like what the game can do for them. Some guys get hurt. Some guys just, you know, they just don't. You talk to Aqib Talib, and he's ready to fight you over a loose football. Some guys say, you got it. I'll get the next one. So, you know, you can't – the best of the best, whiff. Bill Polian's a Hall of Famer. Told me one time he drafted a guard. Two practices in, he turned and apologized to the coach. He can't play. And Bill's a Hall of Famer. Bill was great. And he's like, yeah, I can't play. Well, my bad. So it happens. All right. Rick Bucher. I got to tell you, this Brooklyn thing, I'm selling my stock on him. I made a little money.
You're
on
bailing?
I'm bailing. Brooklyn Nets, sell my stock. Hey, a lot of people, it's got Bitcoin feel to it. If you got in early, you made a lot of money. Maybe now's the time to sell Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Take the profits. This could be the high point. It may be. There's another coin thing now, too.
Dogecoin.
Dogecoin? Yeah. All right, that's another coin I'm not in on. All right, hour two next.